Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
And we promised you Nina Burns, and we just about got Nina Burns in today, but she's here now. And Nina, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning.
You were listening to Hazel there. Seamus Kilkenny says, I feel physically ill listening to what Hazel went through. Where she gets her strength from, I do not know. What an inspiration to overcome such an ordeal and shine on in life as a daughter, mother and partner. Wish her every happiness in life. And incredible, brave lady. Fair play to her for talking about her ordeal and warning to us all to trust our instincts. It was an incredible thing for her to do, I thought.
Oh, incredibly courageous. I mean, it was quite emotional listening to her, and you know, what an incredible person to be able to sit and so eloquently tell her story and be so positive on the back of it, because you know how you come back from something like that.
You'd fold your tent up, I think, and say that's the end.
And people would understand if you did.
Okay, well, Nina, we'll move on to all the texts that we have in with questions for you and things people want to know. Should I have a uterine prolapse surgery? Should I agree to it? What are the risks? I'm 39 with four kids.
Okay, this is a very, I can't really answer this without knowing you and knowing, you know, and seeing you. Obviously, any surgery has its risks, from the very basic risks of having an anaesthetic. You know, I mean, if you have a general anaesthetic, there are risks involved. To risks of the surgery, which always includes infection and scarring and pain and various other issues. And womb surgery also, some of the risks include changes in bladder and bowel function. But it really depends on what problem has given rise to the fact that you need the surgery. Clearly, if it's for anything malignant, it needs to be done. Clearly, if you have very poor quality of life due to your symptoms, then it's worth having the risk. So I think really it can be a very personal discussion, one you should have ideally with the surgeon who's going to do the operation, because they can more clearly let you know the risks, let you know the complications. And you should always be given time to make decisions about this. I mean, if you're not sure, go home and think about it. In saying that, you know, many people are referred for surgery because they have a lot of pain or discomfort, or, you know, if it's a prolapse, there can be an awful lot of pressure and bladder and bowel problems. And most people do very well after. The one thing I would say as a doctor, because I get asked this question all the time, patients who aren't sure about an operation will come in and they will say, should I have it? And they feel you're sitting on the fence when you don't answer the question. But as a doctor, it's not up to me to say you should have the surgery. Clearly, as I said, if you have a tumour or something, say, look, it has to come out. But if it's for other reasons, unfortunately, you are the one that has to make the decision. And a lot of people get very upset when a doctor doesn't say to them, go for it. But legally, we can't. And that's why we can't say to you, go for it. We can say, look, think about the benefits versus the risks. But ultimately, you have to make the decision yourself.
I suffer from extreme dry throat, says Mary, during the night while I'm sleeping. Get a bit of that myself sometimes. I could drink a whole bottle of water throughout the night, constantly waking and needing a drink. I have no flu or cold and don't feel stuffed up. It then seems to be getting worse rather than better. It's a little tickle. Do you ever get that tickle that drives
you? If you sleep with someone, ask them, do you snore? Because it's quite likely she's a mouth breather. And if you breathe through your mouth, then you get a dry throat. And a lot of people, you know, have nasal congestion that they don't realise. But when they lie down, the nose blocks off a bit and they've got dripping down the back of the throat and congestion. And they end up mouth breathing. And then they wake up with this dry mouth and they have to keep drinking water. Other things, I think we've spoken about sleep apnea before. People who have difficulty with apnea often wake, you know, often they don't even realise they've woken loads of time during the night. But they also can have this sort of dry mouth sensation and choking sensation. So I always think if you share a bed with someone, it's worth asking them, do you snore? Do you grunt? Do you sound like you're not going to breathe? And if you do any of those things, go talk to your doctor. The nasal sprays can help if it's nasal congestion. And if there's a suspicion that you have sleep apnea, you can be referred for a sleep study, and you know that can be treated as well.
What about congestion? What's the best decongestant?
Okay, there are over-the-counter decongestants that you can buy.
Go with those ones first.
Only for a few days, though. If you use those regularly, you'll get rhinitis medicamentosa, which means that it gets worse when you stop them. So there are prescription sprays that you can use on an ongoing basis. Antihistamine tablets can help as well. It's extremely common in Ireland, rhinitis, and this time of year, this weather is driving people crazy. I had to use my own nasal spray this morning, so I know where you're all at, but it is treatable. So, but the key is use the treatment regularly. I have so many people who say, oh, you gave me that treatment, it was great. As soon as I stopped it, it came back. A lot of these treatments are designed to be used on an ongoing basis, say through the winter or through the summer if it's allergy-based.
Okay. I'm a 25-year-old woman. Good health, exercise regularly and all the rest. On Christmas Day, I got what I thought was a blister on my leg just above my ankle, and it started getting painful. And after a visit to the chiropodist last Friday, I was advised to see a doctor as she thought it was an ulcer. The doctor examined it and agreed that it was an ulcer, as I recently underwent a smear test and the results came back abnormal. My doctor is now sending me for a series of tests and I am worried. I've read that ulcers can only happen to the older generation. Is there a reason why I have one, and are the two connected?
It's unlikely that your abnormal smear is related to the ulcer on your leg, but ulcers, although yes, they are more common in older people who may have problems with circulation, either their veins or their arteries, and there are different types of ulcers. There can be a traumatic ulcer, which is where you've a cut, that an injury that just didn't heal properly. You can have venous ulcers, which often occur in people who have bad varicose veins, and then you can have arterial ulcers, which occur in people who have problems with their arteries. So it is always worth, if it's a painful ulcer that can be associated with problems in the blood supply, so particularly if someone's a smoker or there's any suggestion that they may have any cardiovascular risks, you often would get that checked out. But any ulcer that's not healing needs to be checked, and a dermatologist will often take a sample off it to see what kind of tissue is in it. Is it infective, or is it inflammation, or what exactly is causing the skin to inflame, and particularly why is it not healing? So if we've cut ourselves and the skin breaks down, it should heal. If it doesn't heal, you get a small ulcer. If that's not healing, we need to figure out why. And I think that's probably why your GP has referred you.
All right. Now, my name is Helen, and I have been suffering with a sore neck and shoulder with pins and needles running down my right arm. I've been to the doctor and had physio, but it is still as bad today. It's been 17 days and I'm in pain. I'm concerned.
Okay, 17 days wouldn't be particularly long for a muscular problem. Simple muscular problems can take 4 to 6 weeks to settle fully. So if you've strained a muscle, or you know, if you have a sprain, it can take quite a bit of time to settle. Sounds like you're doing the right thing. I mean, if it's in your neck and down into your arm, it most likely is inflammation, maybe pinching on a nerve. Physiotherapists are amazing. I refer people to them all the time. They're very good at treating musculoskeletal conditions, and they're also very good at diagnosing them, as in they will often say this is not settling the way it should, and a good physio will have, you know, a relationship with the local GPs and will communicate back with them. So we're very lucky where we live. We have a number of excellent physios around, and they'll often ring us or write to us and say, look, it's just not progressing the way I want. I wonder, should we do an MRI? You know, and I always listen to that, because they are the ones who have examined. They're the ones who have felt the muscles over time. So any pain that is not settling, it may need further investigation. An MRI is probably the best test to look at the nerves. Unfortunately, in the public system, your doctor can't refer you for that. So it's very frustrating for GPs. But if we feel someone needs an MRI publicly, we actually have to refer them to an outpatient clinic. And as we know, the wait for those can be over a year. Luckily, privately, and I hate bringing that into it, if you have insurance, your GP can arrange that. But MRI is not always the first step, and a lot of people think it is. Going to see your GP, taking some painkillers and having a decent course of physiotherapy, which, I mean, can be a few weeks of physiotherapy, is probably the place to start. And any decent physio will then say to you, actually, it's not getting better the way we want it to. Go back to your doctor. And at that point, you probably need a scan.
Now, can I ask you why my 16-year-old daughter would be very frequently having nosebleeds? This happens in her sleep, and recently she's had up to 4 nosebleeds a day.
Okay, well, if anyone is bleeding, like for instance, if they're having nosebleeds, the first question we ask is, are you bleeding from anywhere else? Are their gums bleeding? Are their periods particularly heavy? Are they, you know, if they cut themselves, do they bleed for a long time? So if there's any suggestion that there's bleeding elsewhere or prolonged bleeding, then they need blood tests just to make sure that there's no cause for the bleeding. In the absence of that, and in most cases it is just the nose bleeding, usually what it is there's an area just inside the nose that we call Little's area, and it's literally just inside in the middle of your nose, and the blood vessels are very near the surface of the skin there. So if that area gets inflamed, it can bleed. And what happens is it bleeds and then it scabs over, and we all know when we've scabs, they get itchy. So often in our sleep particularly, we're rubbing our nose or picking at it, we don't even know we've done it, and it bleeds again. So go to the doctor, they can look in. There are creams we can use to allow that area to heal. If it still isn't healing, then, you know, we refer to an ear, nose and throat doctor, and they will cauterize the nose, which is just they'll treat it to kind of shrink back the blood vessels and stop them bleeding. So do go along and get checked, because you can lose a lot of blood through nosebleeds. You can end up anemic if you're having heavy nosebleeds. So do go along to your GP and get it checked.
Nina, every time of the month I get a nasty spot around my chin area. It's been happening for years. I'm 44 now. The thing is, my chin is getting badly scarred now. I'm guessing this is hormonal. Is there anything I can do to prevent it?
Well, it does sound very like hormonal skin changes, and they're very common. Acne can occur in people, you know, around the time of their periods as well. So first of all, I suppose the contraceptive pill can be quite effective in controlling hormonal change. Around 44, there are still options there that can be used, unless you smoke. If you smoke, you can't have the pill over the age of 35. Well, the one with estrogen. Other than that, there are a lot of creams. If it's just one spot, there are creams that we can prescribe that maybe you could use sort of,
I think it's a few,
if it's just in the chin area, though, there are a number of different creams, and I'd always start with that. If it's a very localized area, there are very good creams to control skin problems, and start with those. The next step is you can take a low-dose antibiotic. Now, that wouldn't be just around your period. It would actually be all the month. So do talk to your doctor. There are prescription options there. And, of course, the worst thing you could do is squeeze it or touch it, which obviously is very hard not to do when you have a painful spot on your face. But the more you squeeze it, the more likely you are to get scarring.
Nina, thank you so much for all of the above. It was a whirlwind visit today, but it was all worth it. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ryan.
See you next time.